citizen army with a fist raised to the sky. Leading them is a mighty man with a mad rage in his eye. My name is James Connolly, I didn't come here to die, but to fight for the rights of the working class.
Irish Blight, English Famine. The Irish Potato Famine as a byproduct of English colonial policy. It was only very recently that Ireland was able to recover the population it had before the famine. Still, nearly 170 years later, the famine leaves its scars on the population and psyche of Ireland, another reminder of English colonialism. The story many are taught and that the English would like to believe is that the famine happened suddenly, with blight striking the potatoes and Ireland was left without food, at no fault of the English. In reality, the famine was forecasted even by the English and was the result of active policy by the English to immiserate the Irish and existed in a 200-year context of brutal English colonialism. The Irish potato famine must be understood not as a singular event, but as yet another link in the chain of English colonization and capitalist development. While the story of English occupation of Ireland begins in the 12th century and certainly entailed atrocities and oppression of the Irish, the conquest was still, as Marx observed, nominal, with many Anglo-Norman lords being integrated into Irish society, and the primary relationship between the Irish and the English being a feudal one and not present in the whole of the island. It is only with the development of English capitalism beginning in the 16th century that the conquest of Ireland begins to escalate and become qualitatively different from what existed before. Now the goal becomes the extermination of the Irish and their replacement by English settlers, with Marx describing the development as such: clearing the island of natives and stocking it with loyal Englishmen. They succeeded only to plant a land-owning aristocracy. English Protestant adventurers, merchants, usurers, who obtained from the English crown the confiscated lands, and gentlemen undertakers who were to plant the seed of the states with native English families. The development of English colonialism in Ireland only continued to develop as English empire and capitalism grew, with the Cromwellian conquest of the whole island in the mid-17th century, where English colonialism was facilitated by the devastation caused by the War of Conquest and aided by state-supported ethnic cleansing of the Irish by a murder, eviction, or enslavement, and their replacement by English settlers. The total control of the island by the English would be followed by economic restructuring meant to make Ireland useful for England, whereby Ireland's burgeoning industrial capacity was dashed upon the rocks, with Ireland becoming forbidden to export their products to anywhere but England, and free trade is established with England, allowing English products to flood the Irish market and again wreck their local economy. With the destruction of any industrial capacity, Ireland was forced to become almost entirely agricultural. In 1861, with anywhere near 4/5 and 6/7 of the population being agricultural and subject to low wages and high rents by English landlords, this situation was worsened by laws codifying Ireland's role of agricultural exporter to England, with Ireland exporting in large quantities corn or wheat, beef, sheep, and pigs to England via the 1667 and 1681 Cattle Acts. Connor McCabe describes the Irish economy in advance of the famine as such: Ireland's role was to provide agricultural produce for the industrial centers of Britain, and this was done mainly in the form of live cattle exports. The domestic economic power blocks, which developed on the back of that trade, resisted almost all attempts at reform of that trade or the development of other forms of trade which would jeopardize their income. Furthermore, McCabe describes the effects of the Cattle Acts. The 1667 and the 1681 Cattle Acts had the effect of turning Ireland into a producer, not just of livestock, but goods as well. UK landlords increasingly let their land to graziers who cleared them of small tenants and turned the land over to pasture. The pressure for new pasture was strong enough in the province of Munster to tempt graziers into enclosing lands previously understood to be commons. In Scott's terms, the destruction of the clan system by Cromwell and total economic and political control of the English economy destroyed the moral economy of the native Irish, as they no longer had a personal relationship with their landlord or even control of considerable land of their own to farm. The conditions of Irish life under English colonization, where the bulk of peasants' accommodations consisted of mud cabins covered in straw, any improvements to their holding, either to the cabins or, say, the drainage of their field, would have resulted in rents being increased. The little land that they had and were able to cultivate, given the tax burden and desire by English landlords to evict them for grazing, meant that famine hung over the mud cabins of Ireland like the sword of Damocles. For approximately 3 months of every year, the average family lived in a state of continuous hunger as old potato stock became exhausted in March or April. This was also the planting season. This state of regular hunger and squalor was the regular living conditions of roughly 76% of Ireland's population. The vast majority of Irish people were not just poor, but nearly destitute and starving, and were faced with basically an unmediated relationship with a market controlled by and for the benefit of the English. This control by the English and destruction of the moral economy, that regardless of the success of the harvest, Irish food had to go to England to feed its cities. All of the societal maladies of British colonialism in Ireland would come together during the potato famine to produce a horrific outcome. Previously mentioned structures and policies of English colonialism worked with active contemporary English and political and economic forces to first allow the famine to happen and then endorse policies that would make the famine worse. The first mark of direct English colonial causality was the fact that the English knew a famine would happen nearly a decade and a half before the famine itself, with a report being delivered to the House of Commons and the House of Lords as early as 1830. The English decision of violent inaction on the prediction of famine was rooted in a combination of dogmatic adherence to laissez-faire economics, colonial racism, and wealth gospel. With the most historically famous advocate of leaving the Irish to starve unassisted being the genocidal Thomas Malthus, who represented the thoughts of the English capitalists, landlords, and imperialists, who saw the extinction of the Irish, or at least their decimation, as a good for civilization, and all the better if it offered more land for them to profitably graze livestock on. Still, seeing disaster on the horizon, the English chose to not improve or alter the agricultural system in Ireland, and disaster did strike in 1845 when Pythora infestans began to spread throughout the island, infecting, rotting, and ruining the potato harvest. Despite the manifest disaster of the potato blight, it was ignored by the English as agitation by the Irish. Instead of reallocating the distribution to help Ireland while it suffered this blight, the food continued to flow from Ireland into the cities and towns of England as the Irish starved. Not just limited to a vague need to help the Irish due to the blight as the famine grew, the English knew exactly what they had to do, as quoted from assistant to the English Secretary of the Treasury. It is no doubt that the forced retention in Ireland of the entire grain harvest of 1845, or even the prohibition of the export of oats and oatmeal alone, would have been sufficient to offset the partial loss of the potato, but only if the government had been prepared to subsidize the purchase of higher-priced native produce. The simple fact was that the English cared not to pay the price of grain to save Irish lives, and would not have to worry about the political challenge from their starving colonial subjects, as only one in 115 Irish people were enfranchised, as opposed to one out of 24 English people. Eventually, as the crisis grew to a point that the English at last had to pay attention to it, even their solution to aid Ireland was laissez-faire, and rather than helping the Irish, ended up in many ways making the crisis worse. The solution to the crisis of the blight was not a government policy of subsidy, as suggested above, nor was it a policy of repatriation of goods to the Irish, but it was another free market solution, the dissolution of the Corn Laws. The dissolution of the Corn Laws removed Ireland's monopoly export status to Britain and allowed grain from the European continent and across the world to flood the British market, decreasing the price of grain. Intending to help the Irish by making the grain cheaper, the grain continued to flow out of Ireland, only now the English landlords and capitalists who took the grain out of Ireland had their bottom lines negatively impacted, and those Irish laborers who harvested the grain now could not be paid as much as they were before. This meant that, with rents remaining the same but wages decreasing, English capitalists could now, even more aggressively, evict their tenants. This desire and economic drive to evict their tenants, now heightened by the economic effects of the repeal of the Corn Laws, was also aided by a still steadily increasing price of meat, wool, and other animal products, the grazing of which required the eviction of tenants, which in part was also due to the Corn Laws repeal, as now more people in England could purchase other foodstuffs. Even the gesture by the English to alleviate the suffering of the Irish had more to do with England securing its access to grain, and still had the effect of further immiserating the Irish, which becomes even more inexcusable when the English knew how to stop the famine, but refused to foot the bill for it. The Irish potato famine represents not a tragedy of mismanagement by a local population of their foodstuffs, but rather represents the disastrous apex of 200 years of English colonialism. Using Senn's entitlement theory for the Irish situation fully indicts the English as the cause of the famine, as all entitlements are mediated through the English. The food situation in Ireland, like general economic and political issues, was totally in the hands of the English. The land the Irish worked is not largely their own, negating the food entitlement. Trade-based entitlements are controlled by the English landlord, capitalists, and labor entitlements are controlled by the English landlords and capitalists, who expropriate Irish labor and collect their rent, and inheritance entitlements are basically non-existent, as the Irish only really own the mud huts which they are financially disincentivized from improving. This circumstance of total English subjugation means that a famine does not stem as a result of vague entitlement failure, but a failure of the English to have any compassion for their Irish subjects, and the choice to continue to ruthlessly exploit their land and labor. This active decision to not just let the Irish suffer, but to further exploit them during their suffering and to enforce the brutal dictates of the English market at the barrel of an English gun is what caused the potato blight to become a famine. All the while, grain and cattle continued across the channel from Ireland to England.
I was born in a Dublin street where the loyal drums do beat and the loving English feet, they tramped all over us. And each day and every night, when me da would come home tight, he'd invite the neighbors outside with this chorus. Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me like a man. Show your wives how you won medals down in Flanders. Tell them how the IRA made you run like hell away. On those green and lovely lanes in Killeshandra. Come and let me hear you tell
when each dawning will be cast aside before us. Oh, and if I be in need, then my kids will see us meet. When the bar to a steam